Okay, well, good evening, everyone. It's wonderful to see you on this very warm summer's evening. My name is Julian Garner. I'm the chief executive here at Tabip. I'm delighted to invite you all to another evening to talk about uses of AI and becoming confident with AI. I'm really pleased that Charlie Joe Tyra has again joined us to help lead some conversation, share some examples. And this evening we're going to be looking at some practical stuff. And also some good practice tips for using particularly ChatGPT, which is the platform which we're looking at just to keep things simple. So that's what we're going to do this evening. We're going to have time for questions and answers afterwards. And yeah, look forward to an interesting conversation. And do join in with your own thoughts and tips and ideas for using AI. This is a member-led organization, so it's great to get members' input as we go through these topics. So just to kick off, last week we had the first session. Charlie Joe introduced the five leading chat tools: ChatGPT, Claude, Copilot, Gemini, and Grok, and included a fun comparison of the Spice Girls produced by one of the chat platforms, which is good fun. We then discussed how they're accessed. So we looked at the fact that you can access them through an app on a smartphone. You can access them through a computer app. Most of them have got an app or a program that you can download, and that comes with some additional functionality around integration with your data on your computer and agentic AI, which we'll touch on later. And there is also the web interface where you can just access it. It's a website. Lots of similarities between those major platforms, but also one or two differences in how the functions work across those different implementations. We talked about the fact that free versions are fine. If you're starting out, just use what's there for free. Paid versions will give you more time and some functionality, but if you're getting going, just play with it and use it and see how you get on. And you might get, if you've got a license, for instance, a Microsoft family account or a business account, you've probably got an effectively paid version of Copilot bundled with that. You might have Gemini included if you've got a Google account at work or at university, and so on. So sometimes you get these things bundled in with other packages and accounts. So yeah, if you're starting out, they're all good depending on your environment. If you're working in Microsoft, then use Copilot. Google, use Gemini. But you know, they're all very good packages. And then we discussed the nature of answers and how you can ensure that you understand what it's giving back to you. It looks like an answer. It sounds like an answer. It feels like it's an answer. It's very confident about being an answer, but it's a probabilistic response to the data that's found on the internet. So the answers need to be used with caution, and we'll maybe touch again on that. Charlie Joe's got a traffic light system which she can share with us later if there's time, just to help you navigate that. But basically, if your health, wealth, or safety depends on it, then make sure there's a human in the loop that you check in and verify the information that it's providing you with. They're very good for creative work, for shaping ideas, but sometimes the detail isn't always accurate. So, and interestingly, lots of them now have that sort of health warning on the back of the responses that you get from them. Yeah. So Charlie Joe shared some of that material. He's put that on his website. There's a link to that on the Tabip website. There's a web page we've set up to support the recordings for this session and also any resources that come forward. And we put links to CJ's website on there. So yeah, so it was a really good first session. And so we're now going to move into the session two this week. So I'm going to kick off just having an opportunity to hear from you guys. How have you been using AI successfully in the last week? Would anyone like to share some
Yeah,
examples of what's been
Julian,
going well?
can you hear me okay? It's
Yeah.
Ricky.
Hi, Ricky. Go ahead.
So I was inspired to play with Gemini because you, Charlie Joe, last week, you said that's particularly good for images. And I do a certain amount of preaching, for example. So I long for the days when I used to be able to just get a marker pen and some felt tips and draw a cartoon. And of course, I tried doing that recently, but it's utterly rubbish. So I've been doing that a little bit with ChatGPT, but I think I mentioned this last week that the interface is so cumbersome and unpleasant to use. So I thought, based on your recommendation last week, I'd have a play with Gemini, because I think you said it was quite good for generating pictures and videos. So just in the last 3.5 hours, actually, because things always end up at the last minute, I've installed Gemini on my Apple Mac. So of course it's a Google product, and it's a little bit sniffy around the edges about Apple products, but it's installed fine. And I had a really, really interesting chat with it for about an hour, and told it that I was blind, and told it that I told it all about my kind of visual aesthetic, and I asked it to generate an image, and it just plonked it in the screen in a way that I couldn't access at all. So then I grumbled at it about how that wasn't really very useful for a blind person. And it came up with a really, 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 really elaborate way for me to get the pictures to automatically dump onto my Android phone, which I haven't got. But actually, that prompted me to look in its library, and I've realized that it's really, really easy to export pictures. So I haven't done this yet, but what I'm obviously going to do is ask it to generate a picture. Well, I have. It's generated me a really nice picture already. So what I'm going to do next is upload that into ChatGPT or Be My Eyes for a description. Be My Eyes
Very
is
good.
great because I can ask it multiple
Think,
questions and really get into the detail, and then feed it back into Gemini saying, please improve it. And I can see this being quite a quick and effective way of generating pictures. I might even try to branch out into video. So
Very
it's
good.
really, really
How exciting is that?
positive. It's positive. It's great. I'm excited. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's
Yeah.
fantastic. Thanks for coming on and sharing that. That's I really
Yeah.
appreciate
Well,
it.
done.
Good on
Well,
you.
thank you, Jojo. It's been
Keep
good.
it
Yeah.
up. Again, Paresh, you've got your hand up. Do you want to come in?
Hi. Good evening.
Hi, Paresh.
Hi. So, my name is Paresh. Just to give you a bit of 1 minute background, I use VoiceOver with smart inversion. Smart inversion. So there's a reason why I'm telling you this. So, thanks to Charlie and yourself for organizing something like this, and I found it really good. So yesterday I was trying to make an application where I had to upload my photograph and my signature, and it needed photograph of a particular size and even the photo of the signature for a particular size in order to upload. So I was getting so much kind of refusal saying, sorry, the photograph is too large. It has to be less than 500 KB. The size of the photo should be about 1200 by this. And I was going round and round. I was trying different utilities to try to compress them. And then I thought of, you know what, let me try ChatGPT. So I uploaded the photo of myself and my signature, and it said, yeah, no problem. What is the requirements? I said, these are the requirements. He said, no problem, I'll do that. Voila, within a few seconds, I had my photos, and then it also told me, which this is absolutely cracked me out completely, that this is real technology. It said, did you realize you send me one your photo in a negative form? And I thought, no, I've sent it properly. It said it's negative, and I can still polish it up and put it into a normal photograph for, but it's come out negative. And then I realized, because I'm using smart inversion, when I take a screenshot, it does not realize that I'm using smart invert. It puts the photograph in a negative way. And honestly, for a blind person, I sometimes I send photographs and things, and people say, why are you sending us negatives? Because it's coming out in. And I just said, this is brilliant. If it wasn't for ChatGPT, I wouldn't have known. And then
Didn't
I uploaded again. I turned off my smart invert, took another screenshot, put it up straight, voila. And the negative side is it said, you run out of your trial. Log in
Run out of
tomorrow
minutes.
at 12:57, and then you can go. So I think you get about five questions or five times. So yeah, thank you so much, and it was brilliant. It was pushing
Oh,
me
that's very good.
towards joining ChatGPT Plus, but we'll
That's
see.
unbelievable. And I go ahead,
Mine's a bit different, probably a lot more simple because I've not really done anything with sort of pictures or images. I am German by birth, and I do like to sometimes watch German programs on German television, and all the apps for those things are just a nightmare. So one day I thought I'd got the Gemini app on my phone. And I thought, okay, I just said, okay, what is on German television ARD channel at 8:15 this evening? And it came up with this, this is on there, this is a title. And then I thought, yeah, but I want the summary. I want to know what it's about. So I put another thing in, can you give me the summary of this? And it did that, it gave me it's always been accurate. So it's really helpful. I use that a lot, and I also actually use it to when I have an issue, say with JAWS or with my computer. Like I've sort of had some issues with settings of my Braille display, and I just told it I use a laptop with JAWS screen reader, and I've got a Braille display such and such. This is the problem. Can you give me directions about how to fix it? And generally, I mean, it doesn't always work instantly, but you can then interrogate further and say, this didn't work. Can you sort of, I've came I came across this problem. Can you give me an idea how to fix that? And I've had some really, really good experience. Doesn't always work 100%. Sometimes it gets a bit, wrong, which is
I
AI.
think
It
that's
can make
interesting that
mistakes.
I think that sort of
But generally,
troubleshooting and
I
is really
do
good.
this now before I actually call any company to help me.
That's really helpful. I mean, that's another great use for it, is it's troubleshooting and problem solving. So thanks, Sam, for coming on and sharing that. We've got another hand up from Charlie, if you'd like to go ahead.
Hi everyone, I'm Charlie. Another Charlie.
Hello.
Couple of things for me. One is professionally, so I use AI a lot at work. So an example recently is because I work for the government, I was writing this submission to a minister, and I needed to make sure that it lined up with other documents that other people in my team have produced. So I obviously wrote the initial submission. And then fed in all the other documents and using sort of clear prompting, told it exactly what I wanted it to look for in different documents, gave it feedback that I was given, and it sort of helped me to craft the submission. And then
Fantastic.
in my personal sort of life, I've used recently the deep research function on Gemini. So just to look things up, or I've asked it, your good at recommending products for people affected by sight loss. So I'm totally blind. I want to buy this, that, and the other. Look in these places and find suitable products, group by category, by price category. Suggest low, no under £100, medium 1 to 300, and high over 300. So giving it clear directions, produce a report, produce recommendations at the start, and then rationale afterwards. So because I want the recommendations first, don't use tables, graphs, heading, for format properly by heading, things like that. So
Wow, that
clear
sounds very,
prompting.
that's very helpful. Good structure there. We'll perhaps touch on that because I've got a few tips, and you mentioned quite a few there
I'm
in
sorry.
that response.
Okay.
So yeah, it's on the money.
Charlie's obviously a good name for AI, isn't it? It's sure, but
Yeah,
being called Charlie, I think, gives you a head start.
So now we're going to look at some ways to customize ChatGPT. So some of the questions that we or feedback had nice emails following the last session, and there were some points. So last week was great because we were talking about some really big concepts and how to use AI wisely. But a few people said, I'm just starting out on this. I need some tips and tricks just to get going. So we thought we would mix into this second session some practical ways. And we are talking about ChatGPT just because it's simpler to use one tool. But the same approach applies to all of them, and you'll find ways to do this in each of them. So we're just going to, Charlie, Joe, and I are just going to chat through five ways to customize ChatGPT, and then five good habits
to get the best out of it. So we'll chat through those. We'll stop again and ask if anyone's got any reflections on that, things you'd like to add. That'd be really valuable. So as you go through, if you think, oh, how about doing this? This is what I do and it works, then do come into the conversation at the end. So I'm going to kick off. So just if you've got ChatGPT, if you've got to use it on your phone, there's a settings button. Go into settings, and there are various options that you can change. One of them is personality, and within personality there are different styles. So th this is about the Charlie described it well. You're coming to me. Do you want it chatty? Do you want it concise? What's the personality you want from your AI chatbot? Do you want it to be professional, chatty, and so on? So that's the first thing you need to do. CJ, what do you have yours
I
set
think I
on?
just have mine on the basic one. I've been using them for that long that I just don't really worry about it. So sometimes when there's a panic, when it becomes very sycophantic, I notice. But other than that, I just don't really.
No, so the options here are, sorry to cut you off, there's a default preset style and tone. There's professional, which it says is polished and precise. There's friendly, which is warm and chatty. Candid, which is direct and encouraging. Quirky, which is playful and imaginative. Efficient, which is concise and plain. And cynical, which is critical and sarcastic. So if you like sort of critical and sarcastic, you can pick that one, and then you'll enjoy it a bit more than if it was a very cold, dry, professional thing. It might depend whether you're using it for work, for leisure, for your personal interest, and whatever. So that's the way in which you can personalize the style of the responses that you're getting from the AI chatbot, and they've all got similar ways to do that. So there are other ways to just instruct it how to respond to you, but this is a sort of a global one that applies to everything that you do in the tool for that time. The next one is custom instructions. So if you again in settings and under personalization, there's a box that says custom instructions, and in here you can tell it how you want it to respond to you. So on top of those initial ones, so in mine, and I think I might have borrowed this from somewhere else, but it says tell it like it is, don't sugarcoat responses, provide references for facts, provide information over 90% confidence, don't make stuff up, and check with me if you've got any questions. So that's like how I want it to behave, and you can so you might get it to check when it's uncertain, use a certain type of English or language. CJ, any reflections? What do you ask it to do?
I think in the past I've asked it to give examples of things. So say this, so it says this is an example of this is this, because that's how I like to I understand things. So I think I might have told it that I was blind. So when it gets an image to describe it, and
Yeah, that's a good example.
and maybe Well, we're going to come on next to memory, and I think because since the memory has happened, this section has become a little bit less important to me, really, the personal thing. You
I
can
guess
probably,
it's more about, so the two things it says it sort of mentions, one is what ChatGPT should know about you, and I think that's the point you're making about now the memory function does that, and the other is how you like it to respond. So I guess this is still a useful space to customize how you want it to respond to you, and those things about don't use images and stuff like that, describe stuff that would be useful in there. So managing memory, do you want to talk about that one and how that works?
So I say previously you could sort of give it a little bit of background. You could say, speak like this and don't say this sort of thing, and you could give it some sort of examples. With memory now, it tends to just remember things as you're working, and that you can obviously choose to have it remember or not, and you can also choose to have it whether it can reference memories. So and the first time it happened, so I was chatting with it one day, and it just casually mentioned one of my cats, and I was like, how did it know that? And it's because I'd mentioned one of the cats the previous day, and it had remembered. So it will just decide at the end of each session. It sort of compacts it. It does this thing called compact, and it remembers stuff. And they're trying to make it more like a human being, so it just chooses what to remember and what not to. And it can be really good because it makes you feel more personable. It makes you feel more like it can persist over time, and it makes you feel more like a a real thing you're talking to, and it, when it says, oh, princess will say this, and it'd be like, what about Pepper? And those sort of things, it can really make it more pleasant to use, and it can be really useful. But you have to be careful because, again, it's lulling you into a false sense of reality. So, but it makes it easier because when I just add an image now, and just I don't have to say anything, and it just knows to give me WCAG compliant alt text and bi text, which is my version of description. So it just it learns what to do, and it makes it easier and more useful. But I say with all of these things, I sound like I'm paranoid, but you always need to be aware of.
What you put in there.
Yeah, and the problem with these things is that it's almost impossible for us to forget that it's not a person because it acts like a person, it sounds like a person, it talks to you like a person. So one
So
of
this, yeah, sorry, Karen.
I was just saying, one of the personal rules I've set myself is that when I'm working with it, I talk to it like it's a person. But when I'm finished, I just close the lid. I don't say goodnight to it or goodbye or see you next time or thanks or anything. None of that nonsense. So I will chat with it. I will say make little comments and have little chats with it as I'm working because it makes it more pleasant and more useful. But at the end of the session, I just close the lid or escape out of the session because so I do that for my own mental hygiene because otherwise, you can forget that it isn't a person, especially when it casually mentions something from your life.
No, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I think once I said, oh, can you analyze this? And, there's quite a lot for it to do. And I said, oh, just I'll leave you to do this while I go for a dog walk.
Yeah.
And I'll see you later. And then I came back and it was like, oh, how'd the dog walk go? What was it like? And you're suddenly having a
Yeah.
chat about what you where you went with the dog, and it's like, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
It's
Yeah.
quite anyway. To come back to the memory point, if you go into the settings, there's a switch on here, a button to enable memory. So you can turn that off or you can turn it on. There's also memory summary, so that will show you what it is recorded and what it's using in its memory, and you can delete or edit that, and you can delete if you don't want it there. It asks for your nickname, so you can, if you like, if you've signed up with F Frederick, it's your account name, but you like to be called Fred, you can put that in there. It asks for your occupation, and it also says more about you, and that's where you can put in, I'm, you can put in what you like. I like bird watching. I'm 59. I live in Scunthorpe. I'm an engineer. I like these are my hobbies. You can give it a profile that you think will help sort of generally steer its responses, so that it's sort of things you like to hear, and personalize it. So that's in the memory section under the settings. So that's one thing. And then there's some sort of just changing the voice. There's a couple which you can change. So this doesn't change the style of the re response, like the first one does, the personality. This is literally the voice that's used. But there's like Sol, which I think might be the default, which is savvy and relaxed. There's Ember, which is confident and optimistic. Breeze, which is animated and earnest. So it's really just checking your voice setting, a bit like Jaws, picking a voice that you like and you feel comfortable with. And that's under settings, and there's voice. And then so here I've got,
It's lovely to meet you. What would you like to chat about?
that's Vale. Don't know whether you can hear that coming through.
That is team. How can I help?
So that's Juniper.
To see you. What's new in your world?
That's Cove.
Yo, how's it going? I've got time to talk if you do.
So yeah, so you can pick a voice that you like, and make it personal that way. There are accessibility settings, so you can change the accent color and the appearance, if that's something that helps you. So that's the voice bit. And then privacy controls. It's basically whether it records your data to the model. So whether you want what you're doing to improve the model for everyone, and for it to have sort of basically make use of your data, or you can turn that off so that it doesn't. And so you're accessing data on the model, but you're not sending data the other way. So if you're really concerned about not sharing any personal information, you could turn that off, and then it won't be sharing. It'll just use it internally in your system. So that's an important thing. And then the other thing we just wanted to touch on. So that's those all those things in the settings. You were going to talk about connectors, CJ.
Oh, yeah. So with ChatGPT and Claude, and with all of them, in fact, you can connect various other applications to them. So you can connect Gmail, Google Mail, your Google Calendar, your Google Drive, Google Docs. You can connect Slack and Canva, Adobe. You can connect to lots of other different apps and services. And what it allows you to do is, so I was having a chat with ChatGPT this afternoon, and it came up with a really good answer. And I just said, I'll send that to Julian in an email. And it did. It just sent the last answer to Julian in an email. So it connected to my Gmail account. It created the email. And I think that just sent it because I said send. I know when I do that in Claude, it puts it in the drafts, and I have to go into then into Gmail and go into the drafts and then physically
Oh, and then
press
send it.
send.
Yeah.
I think with the ChatGPT, because I was in work and I said send, it just sent that one anyway. Maybe that's a different setting. But what it allows you to do is, I was explaining to Julian, I was in a dispute with a company earlier on this year, and it was getting quite hairy. I had about a 3 month email backwards and forwards with them, and because my Gmail was connected to Claude, every time they emailed me, it could go back 3 months, and it could answer them with 15 different emails from 15 different conversations they'd had with me. In the end, the chief executive just emailed me and said, "This has gone long enough. We'll give you a full refund and just keep the product." But it was because every single email they'd ever sent me and every reply I'd ever sent them was stored, and the AI could access all of them. And it was just fantastic, because it would send, it would say, I don't agree with this, and because of these 15 things, and each of the 15 points was referenced with a quote from their email and a quote from mine and the date and time. And it was just fantastic. So, but connecting these things to your calendars and your Gmail is really, really useful.
And you're using it for your website creation as well, aren't you, through GitHub, is that right?
Yeah, so I host my website on GitHub Pages. So I've got my GitHub repo connected there via Codex, so I can just change my website and from ChatGPT.
Yeah. So very powerful. Obviously, you need to be confident with giving it permission to have access on your computer. And you get the option, there'll be a tick box for you to say yes, I'm happy with it having access, and you need to give it approval, and you can limit the scope which it has in terms of which files it can access and so on. I'm not sure. I was having a quick look before the meeting whether at one point there wasn't a connector for Microsoft 365. Obviously, you can use Copilot within 365, but I think I was looking at Claude and trying to connect that to my one of my Outlook accounts, and it wasn't there.
Seems to be
Yeah.
like Google seems to be the best one to go with, doesn't it?
Yeah, seems to be more integrated. Okay, so those are some settings that you can go through, and they will help to personalize it, manage your memory, and improve, sort of customize the nature of the responses that you're getting. So if you're using ChatGPT out of the box, it's worth going into those settings and amending those, and that will already start to improve your the quality and the relevance of some of the responses that you get from it, rather than just using it cold. So moving on to the five good habits of, I mean, this would apply to ChatGPT, but also to others. So the first one is giving. And I was interested in was it Charlie that you the research you were doing. So number one is give ChatGPT context. So it depends heavily on the quality of the answer, depends heavily on the information that you give it. So for instance, instead of just saying write a letter, write a friendly letter to my landlord explaining that my boiler has been broken for 3 days. Keep it under 200 words, and you're going to get a much better response from that. If you want to do some research into hotels in Leeds, rather than just say, tell me about five hotels in Leeds, give it more context. I want to be near the railway station. I want it to cost under £200 a night. I want it to have a flexible arrival time and check out, and I want, to check the menu has got gluten-free options on it, and to present that again, like I think it was Charlie was saying, present it in a bullet-pointed list or in a table, with that information, summarizing it. So the more context you give it, the much you'll get much better answers from it. So that's the first tip. Any additional points from you, CJ?
So the word context comes up an awful lot when we talk about AI large language models. And one of the simplest things you can do is if you want to write, so Charlie mentioned that he's writing stuff based on government documents. If you upload into it 15 types, 15 different documents written by other people, and then say to it, write a document that's similar to these. If you've loaded in 15 examples into the memory, it will be much, much, much better at copying it. So the context is almost like it's working memory. So I you can almost hypnotize these things by saying, read these five letters and now write one in the same style. And so the trick to getting consistent work out of them is if you use it to write a certain type of report every week, if you load in the last 15 weeks' reports, then next week's one, when it generated, it will be much more like all the rest. And as somebody else mentioned, you can do a deep research report. If you ask it to do a deep research report into, like this afternoon, I asked it to do a deep research report into all the national sight loss charities. That gave me a 22-page report. I uploaded that into its context, and then I could then say, look at this and tell me how it compares, give me an example of this. And it's almost like you load it into its working memory. You make it that version of ChatGPT. So when you just use the open the first box you go into, it's everything it knows. But if you load in five William Shakespeare sonnets and then say, now write a sonnet about a cat and a dog, it remembers that. It's a bit like it remembers the last thing it's read. It's not really like that, but it's like it's working memory. So one way of getting consistency out of it is to give it examples of things that you've done in the past.
And CJ, can I just add to that that the projects is a good way. So when we talked about, well, giving it context in the questions, when we talked about settings, we had about personalization and customization, which are going to apply to all of the conversations that you have with the tool. You can also create projects and customize projects. So it depends a bit across platforms, but in ChatGPT on the app, you go in and it's got on the left, it's got on the drop down menu, one of the options is projects, and then you can create a new project and you can start talking about the subject that you're interested in. And you can upload within the project, you can upload source documents. So you can add websites, images, links to Google Drive, whatever. So you can give localized context to a project, and then just that project will be influenced by, say, the format of those other documents, but it won't then influence the format of stuff you're doing about your home shopping list or whatever. So you can have project specific context as well, and that again, if you're working on a project over a period of time, store it in a project, and then you really start to build value and insight into the conversation that you're having about that particular thing. So I think that's also really helpful.
Yeah, it's fantastically useful because it allows you to get consistent output from them, because it can just it generates the whatever it generates based on its own rules and its own training. But if you give it context, so I write design fiction and I have different characters, so I have a project with all of the pieces for one character in. So say Big Charlie's one of the characters, and there's about 25 documents of Big Charlie. So when I go into the Big Charlie project and ask it to write a product review in as Big Charlie, it's perfect because it's got 25 examples of Big Charlie reviews. So it just allows you to get much more consistency and much more repetition quality.
Good. Thank you. So that was the first one. Give context. Second is tell exactly what you want, and we've sort of touched on this already, but be specific about the outcome. So, for example, I'd like you to explain this simply. If you're asking it about a complex problem, give me a simple answer, or give me three options, or make it suitable for a 10-year-old. Summarize it in five bullet points, or produce a table, or even like challenge my assumptions. So, direct what you want. If you want a short answer, it's like Charlie said, it could give you a 22-page report if you want a 200 word summary, if you tell it that, you'll make, be much more efficient use of your time, and you're more likely to get what you want. So spell out the outcome that you'd like, the format of the outcome that you want from the tool.
And a little tip here, which is quite interesting, is that if you want to imagine something, say you've never seen a map of the Middle East, or say you've never seen a map of the Far East and you don't really understand where Vietnam is in comparison to Thailand, you can say, describe the geography of the Far East in relation to a clock face. And it so it also all the back of your left hand, or something that something that visually the layout or physically the layout. So you can ask it to describe something in the sense of something else. So
That's really
visually,
helpful.
yeah. So for instance, I asked it to explain exactly what a parabola looks like, and it described it. So if you don't know what certain things look like, it can describe them to you. Now, obviously, if you've never seen a sunset, you won't know what orange means. But you can ask it to explain something without colours.
That's really helpful, especially, yeah, non-visual information to describe things. Good. Okay, so that's the second thing. So third, have a conversation, not a one-shot prompt. So go back and critique, have a conversation with it. If it's not right first time, go back and try again, give it more context, add in some specificity. So, that's great, but could you make it shorter? Or can you explain that without any technical language? Or give me another version. So yeah, keep going at it, add detail. You might have asked your list of hotels, and they're not coming back quite right, and you need to say, look, my hotel's in Leeds, make sure they're only a 5 minute walk from the station because the ones you've given me are miles away. So add detail and content, and you'll get your better answers after two or three follow-ups. And you can also ask it, what would help me, what would help you to give me a better answer? So you can actually use it to sort of challenge itself and to inquire from you additional information that will improve the response. Anything from you, Charlie, on that one? The conversational nature of it.
Sometimes I'll be on Facebook and I'll read a post that somebody's made and it'll really irritate me, and I will t paste it in and I'll say to it, this has really annoyed me, and it's this bit, why do you think that is? And it will ask me questions, and I'll say things, and it will help me to think about what it is that's irritated me. I have a prompt called the Steel Breaker prompt, where I say, argue with me. This is what I think. Argue against me using the best possible good faith answer. So I spend an awful lot of time arguing with it, or getting it to try and break my ideas. So when I write a post about something, I give something, I write a 400-word post, and that's inarguable with, because I've spent weeks arguing with AIs about it. And sometimes I will ask it to, explain this in a different way.
Yeah. Okay, that's really helpful. Fourth point is ask it to check its own work. So ask it to it can review, critique, or improve what's already been produced. So, and we just touched on that. So check this for mistakes. What assumptions have you made? What have I forgotten to ask? Give me reasons why this advice might be wrong. So you can always sort of it comes back with a really convincing answer. But I did a I was writing an end of year report for a project, and asked it to do, just remind me any other new technology that had come out in the last 12 months around BI tech, and included a couple of items. I thought, that's not new. That's been out for ages. So I said, are you sure that's new? I don't think that's right. And it came back and said, no, you're absolutely right. I'm sorry about that. That shouldn't be on the list. And then I asked about something else. I said, so actually, I'm not going to make any comments on this because I don't think I can be confident about the answer. So, it almost like called its bluff. And then, rather than persisting in its being wrong, it came back and sort of changed its approach to that answer. So it comes back to the issue about sort of how accurate is it, and be prepared to challenge it and ask for collaboration and correction if you don't doesn't sound right to you. So yeah.
One of the things you need to be aware of is I sometimes see posts where people say, I asked ChatGPT to explain something and this is what it said. And they're sometimes they're really impressed with that. And I just think, oh, isn't that delightful? Because all that is what I call inference theatre. So it's ChatGPT doing ChatGPT about ChatGPT. So it makes up an answer. Then when you ask it why it said that, it makes up a reason. And then you ask it to then do some self-reflection and it makes up self-reflection. It's turtles all the way down. It has no inner sense of self. It has no metacognition.
No.
Once it was generating a post for me, and it said that the phrase, the thing was that you can ask your AI assistant. And at that point, it put a waving hand emoji. And I nearly had a heart attack because I was like, oh my God, it's ASI. It's alive. It knows when I'm talking about your AI assistant, it knows it's writing about. So it put a waving hand. And I was like, oh my God, I thought it was the Terminator. But what it turns out is that's just pattern recognition, because lots of times where it says your AI assistant is waving hands on the internet. So it didn't know it was talking about itself. So when you ask it to explain why it said something, it will explain in very great detail why it did it. But that is just another made up answer. That's so you need
Just to be careful.
yeah. So it's a
And so the
bit.
final
So
point, number five, is treat it as a thinking partner, not an authority. So it's very capable, but it's also can make mistakes and be out of date, which is and I did try it because when they first came out, it used historic information. And so if you asked it who the king or queen of England was, it would be out of date. But I did, out of interest, I just went into ChatGPT and says who's the prime minister, and it did come back with Andy Burnham. So that was a relief that it was up to date, and now most of them are linked to the internet, so they'll get up to date information, and like on the weather. So some of it will use existing knowledge, and if it's not sure, it will go, or if it's date specific, it will go to the internet and do that extra step of checking against current knowledge. So it does seem to be fairly current on current facts, current affairs, and stuff like that. They're really good for being a thinking partner. However you like to think of it, someone down the pub that you like to have a chat with about a subject, or a smart intern that's sitting next to you in the office. They're great for brainstorming ideas, comparing options, explaining difficult concepts, helping write. You've got a blank page and you're trying to write something, a letter. It's great for starting off and then helping you to gather your thoughts. I did quite a big piece of work putting together about 20 research documents and wanted to look at the trends and sort of common factors within that. And it's so helpful. It saved me probably weeks of work sitting down and doing it myself, of reading it all and trying to correlate stuff. So very, very powerful in terms of that conceptual and bringing together ideas and helping to show links. So definitely a really good use of it in that context. And so just to wrap up that, there is a one of the lots of sort of acronyms for doing this stuff well, but one is COACH, COACH, to remind you how to prompt well and how to get the good habits with AI. So the C is context, tell it what's going on. O is outcome, say exactly what you want. A is ask again. Refine the answer through conversation. C is check, ask it to review or challenge itself. And then H is human judgment, make the final decision yourself. So that's coach, context, outcome, ask again, check, and human judgment. And I think that's a good sort of quick 5 points to sort of think about when you're next looking at using it for a project. Charlie, anything else you want to say on that?
No, I think that's fun. That's really good.
Yeah, we can drop that into the session notes. I mean, there are lots of others guides to using AI well, but I thought that was quite a helpful one. So so that's the end of the five good habits and the personalization, which is, I hope you found that helpful. Anyone want to come in with any questions or observations yourself about how you've started to use AI better? customizing it for your for what you're doing. So Charlie, yeah, come in again.
Yeah, just a quick point on the customizing bit. When we first started using AI at work, we were given AI training, which was really helpful. And one of the things they advised us to do was to say, to prompt the AI and say something like, remember the answers to this. I, ask me 10 questions one by one about me and my working style and preferences, and remember the answers. So it sort of prompts it to ask you the questions. That's one thing we did sort of almost straight away, and that's helped me sort of like one thing I'm very clear about with mine is I want it to be asking me if it's got questions one by one rather than a big list. So that's one thing that I'm very clear that I want it to do, things like that.
That's really helpful, thank you. Can I ask you, if you don't want to answer this
Yeah.
or don't have anything
Yeah.
to comment, then just say so. But in the work, I'm interested in the work context
Yeah.
and particularly working in
Government and stuff,
government
yeah.
sort of stuff. What training were you? What guidance have you had, and what sort of limitations do you find around AI? What's the? I guess the government's fairly on it in terms of how to
I
do
mean,
this. But you'd think
yeah,
of
in
doing it
theory.
well. What are the definite guardrails of what you're not allowed to do?
So I think for us the biggest thing is that we only are allowed to use documents at a particular level in a particular application. So our application of choice in my department is Copilot. So they're very, very strict about the fact we can only use that. We cannot use anything else. We use sort of there's lots of stuff on, I think it's ai.gov.uk, but don't quote me on it, and get you the proper link and send it over. Lots of like good practice guides from a government perspective on how to use it. But yeah, that's the main thing, is just only use AI in the context that you're happy with. Always check your work, all the same of the stuff that you're talking about, really. But it's not so going against, it's not like going outside of the government parameters to use it. So I couldn't upload my stuff into Gemini or something like that. I can only use the software that I can use. And then it's about keeping up to date as well. So making sure that we try and, where possible, like speak to each other. We've got good like communities of practice in work, so learning from each other how we use AI effectively.
That's really good. And so you've had, sounds like you've had quite a lot of training on that, which is great. Very good. Great. Well, maybe you can come back and do some transfer of learning of some of the stuff you've learned, if it's relevant to Tabit members, and perhaps we've got another session. Be good. Okay, moving on. Barry, you've got your hand up. You'd like to come in?
Yeah, hi there. I just wanted to go back over something you were talking about earlier about giving access to like Gmail. I mean, are you not concerned around privacy given AI and maybe third parties access to your personal email? I also
I'm not
I
being funny,
have
but it's Google.
yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, Google know everything there is to know about me, don't they? Because I've used Gmail for 20 years. It's not like it's the bloke next door. It's Google. That's that. I'm not. It's. I am concerned, but it's not. But it's Google.
Right. But there are people who are concerned about that, so
Yeah, and that's why I said only do it if you want to, because
yeah.
you don't have to. But to me, it was unbelievably useful too. And as I say, it's Google, and Google are the data company, aren't they? So it doesn't bother me. But there are things that I don't do with AI because I don't want, my attitude is that if it's in Google, then Google know it all. So OpenAI and Anthropic might as well know. But it's a bit like secrets. If I don't want people to know things, I don't tell anybody.
And this
So
is
I,
sort of similar to
mm.
the thing. I don't know if you saw on the news even about the thing with Claude, where now you can actually see people's searches within Google that they've put into Claude. I don't know how that happened, but you can see that in Google search results sometimes now. I don't know how that got leaked, but there was a thing the other day about that. The point is, Google knows everything.
And that's why I don't mind using. I mean, I have other email addresses which are private, but my Google Mail is, I have two different Google addresses. One of them is personal, one's private, and I am a bit more careful about the private one. But most of Google, I just assume that they know everything.
It's a good point, well made, Barry. And we need to
Yeah.
don't move on, but conscious of Jeff, you've had your hand up for a while, so do you want to come in at this point?
Thanks, Simon. Hi. Hi,
Hi,
everybody.
Jeff.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah, hi. That was really interesting, that last chat. That answered a few of my questions, or at least helped me speculate a bit further. And also, other Charlie about, I thought I was thinking, yeah, that's going to be Microsoft, and it's going to be in-house, because Microsoft, I think, are the only ones who can actually contain the stuff within your own company instance, I believe. Though that may have changed now. Perhaps Charlie Joe can comment on that later. My thoughts are, I've got a Gmail account. I get time contextual sensitive emails about things that I'm involved in. That sounds a bit too mysterious, doesn't it? It's political stuff. So it's if and what I'm thinking is, well, somebody sent me that. It's time sensitive. It's going to be public. It's not so much, is Gemini reading that, but if somebody else is asking, what are X people doing about such and such, will Gemini helpfully go off and read my emails and go back and tell them? So if,
It won't read your emails to other people.
no, yeah. But
I
would it
mean, oh, well,
pick up on the content and use that to infer something in their answer, saying, so in this case, X political party are planning to contest this and tell Y political party when they, yeah, you see what I
no.
mean? Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that that's impossible, but no, but when Julian said earlier about he uses it for training, he talks about months and years down the line. So when you've got a Gmail, when you've got an email in your Gmail account and you ask Gemini to read your Gmail, it isn't sending it off to, it doesn't do that. I'm not saying that they can't, but it's a bit like people, a bit like Alexa doesn't listen to you because they really have, they've got better things to do than listen to me. But literally, they could listen to me via my Alexa, but they don't. So if they could read your Gmail, but Larry Page isn't sitting over in Mountain View thinking I'm going to read Jeff's email because I want to know what. Let's assume it's the Monster Raving Loony Party. You don't have to tell us what the Monster Raving Loony Party are doing in the Clacton by-election on
Oh,
Wednesday
I'm a firm
afternoon.
supporter of campaign face myself, but there you go.
I'm bin face all along as well, so
Yeah,
that's
all the
good.
way, all the
Yeah,
way.
so I honestly don't think it does happen, but obviously, like I said before, if you don't want anybody to know anything, don't tell them. And it is Google who, let remember, I've made about 27 gazillion dollars from selling everybody's information.
I just had a quick look. Just had a quick look. This is model training. If you use a personal Gmail account, Google states it does not train its foundational AI models on your personal email content.
There you
However,
go.
saving your Gemini chat activity can allow human review and data retention of the chat prompts and cells unless you turn off that setting. If you use a paid Google Workspace account through work or school, Google explicitly prohibits using your email and workspace data to train generative AI models without your explicit permission. So I think it is about managing your explicit permissions that you're giving when you're connecting and giving access. Make sure, and I don't know what the defaults are, so you just need to make sure that if you're not sure, go in and check that the explicit consent that you're giving to it when you're enabling these things to link into your own data, I think is the key point. So thanks, Jeff. Any other points or?
That's all well and good, and I feel reassured. But when an advert pops up offering me here's a bin hat, just like Count Binface has got, would you like to buy one for £24? That's when I start worrying, because it
I think
doesn't
that's
listen, but then it does,
that may more be about your Google searching and the relevant
Yeah,
sort of
maybe
links on your
so.
Google searching, not your email account.
It's like when you go to a newspaper website and they say, "Would you accept cookies from us and our 855 partners?"
Yes,
That's
indeed.
what you need to worry about, isn't it?
Okay, good. I want to pick up
Okay,
these
that's
other
great.
questions.
Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. Carla, do you want to come in?
Yeah, sure. I was just wanting to say that there's a couple of other uses for AI, because Jaws has AI built in, and so I've used it on a number of occasions to research to do with Jaws and other tech, using
Just
that.
explain the how that, because I'm aware of the picture smart. What else
Yeah.
is there? How do people access it?
So you can go to Picture Smart and ask any questions about a particular picture. If you've got a picture on your computer, you can get it to give you really detailed descriptions and describe it. But you can also go in and do a conversation through JAWS to get to ChatGPT and then start prompting it that way as well.
Okay, is that automatic or do you have to do some clever connecting? Is that out of the box with JAWS now?
It is, yeah.
So it is. I'd just like to sort of add to that as well. So you do, if you want to, so I haven't seen what features they have, but they unfortunately, again, it's this whole EU regulations thing with AI. People can do more with JAWS. I don't specifically know what, but if you, unfortunately, you have to change your time zone to Eastern Central or Mountain in the US and use a VPN. But if you are prepared to do that, that does unlock the option for you to create a JAWS account. And once you've then done that, you can then go ahead and use more AI features. But again, it's not officially promoted.
Thanks for that clarification, and thanks, Carla, for the point about JAWS. Was there anything else you wanted to add?
Just to say that I've also used Codepilot to draft background for Teams. And bearing in mind I have no sight at all, and all I did was upload a photo that I took with the Meta smart glasses and got it to sort out a background with that particular photo, and asking it to resize it so that it worked, asked it to because there was a picture of my dog, to move my dog so that I could still be seen. So it did that. Everybody that has seen this background said it's a really good background. So clearly, with no sight at all, you can manipulate photos to really get a good idea of what it is. And then I asked it to describe what it had created in detail, so that I had a really good idea of what the background was.
Well, that's great. We were due to, I think we're going to run out of time, CJ, but we'll maybe do it next week now. We're going to do some work around video description and generation. So that was helpful that you've found that helpful, Carla.
Alexa, what time is it? I could have asked
Right
Julie.
now it's 8:39 p.m.
Cool. Well, I'm happy joining because we're answering people's questions, aren't we?
So should we'll I think we'll keep the conversation going, and then we'll pick up what we'll look at the planning for the third session and pick up on some of the things we've
Yeah,
got to talk about.
that's really because most of the stuff I was going to do tonight we can do next week because we've done some of the important safety
It's
stuff.
really good. Really good conversation. So yeah, pick up with Ricky. You got your hand up? Would you like to come in?
No, I just wondered, Charlie Joe, if you could go do a little bit of a very quick revision on memory, because I've seen it as a feature of Gemini. You talked about it as a feature of ChatGPT. What really is it? Is it something she's scared of, or something we can really leverage? Can you just kind of give a little brief explainer for me?
So basically, when you turn memory on, it will use its own intelligence to remember things, and it's supposed to be clever enough, and it's supposed to be getting more clever as time passes, so it can decide the things it needs to remember. So, like I said, it suddenly referred to one of my cats, and it was, it said, "Oh, they'd be like your princess said this." And I'm like, "Well, hang on a sec, how did you know my cat's called Princess?" And it was because it had remembered it. So,
So is there a feature we need to turn it on, or is it just an
So, as Tuna said, if you're in ChatGPT or any of them, and you go into the settings, there will normally be a section called memory. And there are normally three different things in there. So there's a thing to turn memory on or off, so you can tell it whether it's even allowed to remember things. There's normally another section then which says you can refer to things in a conversation. So if we're having a conversation and it decides it wants to mention something it knows about you, then it's allowed to do that because you can tell it not to do that. And then you can also ask it what it's remembered. Because sometimes, because here's an example. So I have this joke about people who say to me, the internet's a bubble. I always say to them, well, I'm old and I remember the internet, and I remember meeting this guy in 1992 who was going to sell books on the internet. And I say, and I wonder whether what happened to that bloke, Jeff. And of course, I'm joking about meeting Jeff Bezos, aren't I? But Claude kept mentioning about me meeting Jeff Bezos. And I was like, and it wrote in an article that it was like I'd met Jeff Bezos in 1992 before he started Amazon. So I had to go in and edit the memory because that had remembered something I said as a joke.
Got you. Okay.
But
So
it's an
you have to
example.
recognize
Yeah.
that's a memory and then go
Yeah.
and
But
so
it
yeah,
does
you can go
work.
and
check
Yeah.
what it
Yeah.
is using,
Yeah.
and you can turn it off, and you can put whether it shares that stuff to a
Okay.
wider audience or not. So
Very helpful. Thank you.
yeah.
That's
Yeah,
thanks, Ricky.
but it is useful because so for instance, it knows when I lost my sight and how, so it can talk about things in that way. So it does make it really useful, but you just need to be careful, Ricky.
Yeah. Okay, David, do you want to come in? Got your hand up.
I was going to talk a bit about this memories thing and how I use different AI. What I do is when I want things to talk about things where I might want it to remember, then I'm using GPT. And my one, like, it knows now that I use NVDA and this and that, and it knows about my food allergies and it knows all sorts of things. And often it just answers me the way I need answering without me having to prompt it now because it knows all that. And if I want something a bit more private, I use Leo, which is the AI built into Brave, the browser, because that doesn't memorize anything because it's a privacy-focused browser. And then obviously, if I want to know to certain things that if I want to know, I use Gemini, and I have that remembering as well, but it doesn't remember as much as GPT. It's not as good at the actual memorizing things. So, yeah, and as for the coach thing as well, that is really important because it, to be fair, it does talk absolute rubbish a lot of the time. It does make things up, but you just have to check that. The one thing none of them seem to be able to reliably do, and they will try and do it, and they're getting it very badly wrong, is give directions. But they seem to be doing mirror images of directions and all sorts of horrible things. That's not working at all at the moment. There are lots of things that are working. That's one thing that isn't.
That's interesting, isn't it? If you're using smart glasses with a chat tool and asking directions, it's needing to know what you use for that. So
I haven't tried that with Meta. I haven't tried
Voice Vista
Meta for
and
directions yet.
Google Maps might be better, using that
Yeah.
dedicated tool rather than a general chat bot for that type of thing. So that's
Absolutely. I would
interesting.
definitely stick to a navigation app for navigation.
Yeah. Okay. That's really helpful. Thank you, David. And can I bring Sandra in? You've got your hand up. Hi, Sandra.
Hello, Sandra.
So I wanted to ask two questions. One was possibly covered last time about, I suppose, the difference between using an account slash paying for whatever the product is and just sort of typing into the edit field. Because I've used ChatGPT. I haven't been able to use some of the other ones. But with ChatGPT, I just literally go to the website, type in the edit field, and then leave. But given what you've been saying over the last couple of weeks, you seem to get a lot more out of having an account and being able to upload things. Because you can't, well, you can upload things to the free, like typing in an edit field,
Yeah, but you're
but
starting from scratch every time, aren't you, with it?
yeah, well, that's kind of the appeal for me because I didn't really want it kind of storing things about me, and but I think I'm willing to take that if I consider to delete things after the fact. I didn't know you could do that. So that sounds good. But in terms of that, like this customizing the personality thing, I guess you could do that within an app. So rather than just the edit field version, is that correct?
Charlie J, do you want to
Again, if you go into the apps on your phone, I think you probably need to be logging in to be honest with you, I'm not even sure whether it's been so long since I used any of them without logging in.
Okay.
I mean, the only one I use without logging in is Grok, and I don't use Grok. So the other four, I have accounts. I think, you know, if you want to just, like, the way you use them is fine. You know, I don't have a loyalty card with the supermarkets. I hate the idea of them sending me emails saying you bought trifles, those last week. My sister gets a thing saying she's the person on the world who bought the most of this type of tea, and I think that's terrible. So I understand if you don't want it to remember you, but it's a bit like with the supermarket loyalty card. The benefits of logging in are so good because of the memory and the personalization of how it gets to know you. It is worth it, but you pretty much have to log in to do that.
Yeah, okay. But you don't have to pay for it to access some of the features that you've been talking about, or do you?
No, I don't think you don't have to pay to customize and do the memory.
No, you don't have to pay.
No, you have to pay if you want to use it more or if you want to use the best. There are different models.
So yeah, the charging is slightly differently. So ChatGPT just says if you pay, so ChatGPT Plus, which is $20 a month, offers higher usage limits on advanced reasoning models, fast response speeds, and access to specialized tools like deep research and custom agents. But the basic stuff you can use on the free versions, but have an account and then you can personalize it.
Okay. And then my last question is about graphs, because the after the session did say it would talk about graphs and things.
Yeah.
So you upload a document then, or a project, and it can describe that. Is that right?
Do you mean a graph? Yeah, you can. Yeah. And so do you ever use the graph thing in Jaws where it would tell you the axes, and it's tedious, isn't it? What you can do with a language model is you can say, what would somebody looking at this see? What would I see if I looked at this graph? And, you know, the example I had was, well, it's ice cream, and it would show ice cream going up a lot in July and staying steady till October and then dropping right back off. So it can describe. Oh, okay. Yeah. And again, how I wouldn't be, you know, if you were a radiographer, I wouldn't be diagnosing anybody with that. Or if you're making financial investments, I wouldn't be doing that. But if you just want to say, what does a graph show you? You know, one of the things I often say is, what would somebody see if they looked at this? That's the prompt I use with an image.
Okay. Yeah, that's really good. And in terms of graphs, because I'm looking at doing some statistical things and looking at apps for that, and apparently R is accessible and R Studio isn't as accessible, but it is more accessible than some of the others and SPSS and stuff. So just wondering if I could work around it with like AI or something, as in uploading files from programs like that, or like raw data and like, you know.
Yeah, I had to use SPSS about 4 years ago before ChatGPT came out, and I had to have a support worker to do it. And I'm going to be I'm back at university doing psychology again next year, and I'm wondering now if I need to do any of that. Whether I'd be able to use AI for that, I don't know. But
That's what I'm thinking about, something similar.
As I say, you know, SPSS, is it SPSS? Yeah, then that was absolutely completely inaccessible. You know, I had to have a support worker. So, but our studio is all text-based, isn't it? And it's programmable. I mean, I'd imagine that's probably got a really great interface to work with something like Claude Code now. It's actually, you really got me thinking about that.
One thing the AIs are very good at, actually, is working out whether a program is likely to be accessible or not. Yeah. I get really good results if I say, you know, which one of these is actually accessible, and it will tell me what works with NVDA or VoiceOver.
Yeah, it's surprisingly good, isn't it? I mean, you can ask it, how would I do this with NVDA, and it would tell you. And I had a friend that she was using VoiceOver, and I was like, explain how you do this in VoiceOver based on the NVDA, and it's unbelievably good at those things, isn't it? Because
there's actually somebody who's created an AI bot. I don't know exactly what the URL is. I'll try and find it for next week. But you can go on and you can put into the bot, what's this command for NVIDIA, whatever, and it will just pop straight up, which is kind of neat.
That's really helpful. So it's interesting. It's a few things that would be good to follow up on, looking at a bit deeper in terms of graphs, which I'm afraid we were going to look at but ran out of time. So we'll try and pick up on some of these interesting points and come back with some detail. Anything else, Sandra?
Well, I mean, just on graphs and I suppose the same thing, like pie charts or any other data pictorial thing, but I suppose it's the same idea, is that it will describe, or what would someone see looking at this? I'm going to write that down because and just what file types can these things cope with, and which one's the best one for doing graphy things, or does it matter?
So the thing to graphs I was looking at were all images, so they were just photographs of graphs basically. But Claude's got a plugin for Excel, and so it will work with the charts there. But the things I was just basically looking at graphs as photographs, and I was just using the visual intelligence because the vision part of these AIs are incredibly sophisticated, and you can just get it to look at the photograph of the graph and explain it to you.
And does it matter what file type it is?
I don't think so. No,
Okay, great.
I don't think so. I think we'll put it this way, any of the files I've got on my computer, it tends to work with. Only Gemini tends to work with movies and sounds, but the ChatGPT and Claude tend to work mainly with images like, PNGs and GP, J, whatever the JPEGs.
JPEGs,
Yeah, and TIFFs. I mean, mine never has the extensions anymore, so I don't really know what they are, but it just tends to work with flat images. Gemini tends to work with movies. But and you can do a screenshot in it, and then so you could have a graph on a page and do a screenshot, and it would just work with that.
Okay, thank you so very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Sandra. Good to speak to you.
So
Carly,
I
you've got your hand
think,
up again.
but just
Oh,
before
Dan,
we
yeah,
move
go
on with
on.
the chat GPT a second, I just wanted to say I haven't seen any limitations with ChatGPT. So I've not actually the same as Sandra. I've not got the login, nor have I got the paid version. But I have asked it very complex things like router configurations, Wi-Fi configurations, command line stuff, and it's never stopped me asking any questions. So I have not seen a limitation in the web UI at all. It's really strange, as in like why you would pay for it, as it were.
Sorry, I was just going to come back and like I've come up against limitations with just kind of not looking at things in terms of files. So I used to be able to upload a file and then it would describe this or that, and I won't allow that anymore, and it won't create a file either. So it'll say something like, I can create a PDF of this or that, and then I'll say something like, well, do that then. It's like, oh, you have to be logged in to do that. That's a
So
thing.
basically, yeah, it seems like if you ask it generic questions or you don't want it to do anything with your system, it's fine. It's only if you're doing things with files that it will. Because, yeah, I've asked it some really complex techie stuff.
Yeah, what it said to me was that it remembers more and it remembers conversations for longer if you've got a paid thing. But it will do some memorizing, but it kind of tends to lose track a bit more if you haven't paid.
Okay,
Yeah,
that's helpful. Thank you.
and also depends. You might get better models if you pay than if you don't pay.
Yeah,
So
if you
it
want
might,
to use different tools.
yeah.
Carly, you've got your hand up. You want to come in again?
Yeah, sure. A couple of things just to pick up on. Firstly, with the maps side of things, if you ask the smart glasses directions, you can get them to link through to the either your Apple Maps or Google Maps, and it will give you much more accurate directions than if you just asked it to just give you generic directions. The other thing is with graphs.
Sorry, Carla, is that just a verbal request when you ask it for direction? Just say, give me directions using Google Maps or Apple Maps. Okay.
You can do that. The other thing is that with graphs, I mean, I've managed to share a graph from an app that ha is that records blood sugar levels, and get it to explain, what it's seeing, and just as you said, you know, tell me how this graph looks as to somebody seeing this, and give me in detail, and it'll do that, which is really useful. The one thing that I've noticed it can't do is if you point your camera to a clock and ask it to tell you the time, it can't do that.
Really? Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. We'll all be trying that later.
I'm sure you will.
I'll have to go. I'll have to buy a clock. Oh no, there is. I think there is a clock somewhere.
yeah. Good point. Mm. Okay. Thanks, Carla. That's helpful. Thank you. Well, so
something that we were talking about images and things. I just wanted to know if you knew where they probably. There may not be. So you know them situations where you you're going on a flight or whatever, or you're joining a bank, and you have to take a live image of your passport. Is there any AI that can actually help you with that? Because obviously you can't use something like Aira for that because it's a live photo. Is there anything that AI can do to assist you with that?
So with ChatGPT, you used to be able to get it to look at your screen on your iPhone and describe it while you were on it.
Right.
And there was a girl who did a video. There's a girl on Facebook called Blindy Girl, I think she's called. And she did a video where it talked her into taking a selfie by telling her when her face was in the viewfinder. What I did get it to do was I did get it to audio describe a YouTube video while I was watching it on YouTube. And that was amazing. So you can do that. And I think that's called screen sharing. And that was all the rage about a year ago. And to be honest, I haven't really done it since. But I think if you go into the ChatGPT app on your iPhone and look for screen share, you can get it to look at your screen and tell it to describe what's on the screen. And people have used it to play games, or people have used it to audio describe YouTube videos while they're watching them. It might still work, but as I say, it's not something I've really bothered with.
Because a prime example right now, as you're probably aware with Apple, is they've got this new stupid, I don't actually know what it even achieves because I've not seen any limitations to it, with the age verification that Apple has now, where you've got to take a live photo of your passport. So.
Oh, right. Okay. So mine did it last week by just saying, oh, we can verify your age by looking at how long you've had an Apple.
ID. So it's all dependent. If you've got an Apple, if you've had an Apple ID for more than 15 years, it will allow you to do it. If you don't, it won't.
Oh, thank goodness for that. I'm so glad I've still got an iPhone. I was going to get a Pixel this year, but I don't think I will now. So that's why they allow you to do that, because I've had an Apple ID.
Yeah, if you've got it 15 years or longer, or you need a credit card, and if you don't have any of them, you've got to verify with a passport or driving license, but it has to be a live photo, you see. So a lot of blind people have come up against that.
Yeah.
They couldn't even use me included. At one time.
I'll just cut in there. Nightmare.
On the Apple one, verification.
Yes.
Yeah, any Apple device.
I used it as a sighted family member, and even they struggled with lining it up and so on.
Yeah.
Living hell.
Well, you know, 5 minutes ago, I was going to say, you know, I've been blind for 40 years, and we really are living in an age of wonders, aren't we? It's unbelievable what we can do. And there's still, even though we can do all of these things we've said, we still have to ask around and get a sighted person to help us do some things, don't we? And that site, that put a live photograph of your password might be the thing, of your passport might be the thing that defeats us. But
yeah, it's surprising with Apple because, you know, they've been so forward on accessibility generally. So a bit of a faux pas, or, you know, they've not found a different way. So Barry, you've got your hand up. You want to come in? We just need to wrap up because we're at 9 o'clock. But yeah, do you come in, ask the question?
Great, thank you. Well, there's more kind of a point, really, that we've been talking about using the apps on the phone to use screen sharing and live video. I mean, I tried to do that on ChatGPT using VoiceOver last week, and I couldn't find the go live button or anything using VoiceOver, but on Gemini it's a lot easier. So I don't know how other people find using the apps on the iPhone. I mean, I just find Gemini labeled better. It's not perfect because I think it says stop sharing when actually you want to start sharing, and it swaps it around. But yeah, it's just find Gemini a little bit more accessible than ChatGPT on the iPhone.
Interesting. I say I haven't tried it for such a long time. I don't even know whether it still does it, I'm afraid. So I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, I mean, I've used screen sharing once before with regards to Gemini. I was on a website and wanted to buy something in a certain color. The first color was labeled, the others weren't. So I used Gemini to share my screen and choose the right color and help me choose the right color and tick the right box, and then was able to choose the color I wanted by sharing my screen and using Gemini. So that was really good and very quick. But
it's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it really is. You know, like I said, I'm not saying it's great being blind, but it's certainly so many things are so easy now, aren't they? You know, I was saying to Julian earlier on, I was doing something this morning and I said to myself, I don't know, how did we cope 20 years ago when we had to work?
Well, this is the thing. I was thinking, oh, I'm going to have to wait for some site to come over just to buy the right color. But I was like, well, let me share the screen and see if I can do it. And I did it within 2 minutes. It was just like, well, yeah, this is great. I don't have to wait for the sighted person to come in their house anymore.
And then at some point, there will inevitably be one thing that you come to then and that won't work. And, you know, it's like I said, it's still not perfect, but it's almost perfect. I mean,
lots of reasons to be hopeful. And, you know, it's going to be an exciting year, I think, isn't it?
It's going to be an exciting
smart glasses coming out, Google glasses, Apple glasses, you know, it's going to be, I think, that side of it, and also, you know, hopefully Glide coming out and starting to hit the pavements in this country. It's gonna be really interesting. So good. I'm sorry to cut things off, we could probably talk for hours, but it's 9 o'clock, and so we ought to let people, CJ, go to bed. Yeah. And
well, the good thing is we're not cancelling next week now, because I wasn't sure what we're going to do next week, and next week we're going to do what we were going to do this week.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And if you, it's been great to have this sort of interactive conversation and to pick up points that members are interested in. So do drop us an email. I've had a few emails, which has been lovely. Do drop us an email to info@tabit.org.uk with topics you'd like us to look at. We'll either try and weave it into next week or do, you know, continue. I think, you know, there's mileage in doing some follow-up sessions on going deeper into certain topics, you know, in looking at more depth. So please do send us in what you would find useful and interesting, and we'll try and build that into next week's session. So thank you very much. CJ, any you'd like to sign off?
I'd just like to say thank you very much, and hopefully I will see all of you next week. Thank you very much.
But yeah, lovely to see you all. Have a good evening, have a good weekend, and hopefully see you all again next week. So good night.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Goodbye.
Take care.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.